Coming to you from the not-for-profit Mainframe Studios at 900 Keogh Way in downtown Des Moines, this is 900 Views, a podcast about building community through the arts as we build an arts community. I'm your host, Pat Bode, and today I'm at the Iowa State Alumni Center in Ames, where my guest and I are attending a conference on the urban and rural interface. Lee Emma Running explores edges in Iowa. Some of her work of late emerges from that line between I-80 and cropland, where she finds roadkill deer bones and converts them from rank to magnificent. More on that in a moment. Lee Emma came here in 2001 after earning her BFA from Pratt Institute. She holds an MFA from the University of Iowa, and her work appears in international public and private collections. She's a Mainframe artist, 2017 Iowa Arts Fellow, professor and chair of the Studio Art Department at Grinnell College. She's currently on sabbatical in Omaha, which we'll explore as part of this interview. Why Omaha? And upon her return, she'll serve as director of the Center for Prairie Studies. She's represented by Olson Larson Galleries in Des Moines, and on August 24th, which should be the day after we post this podcast, she'll be the featured visual artist at Emily and Mason Kessinger's Yellow Door Gallery. Yellow Door moves from venue to venue around Des Moines, and August 24th, you will find the gallery at Mainframe Studios. As a reminder, Emily Suzanne Kessinger was a guest on this program in April, Episode 7. Check it out. And don't miss Yellow Door at Mainframe coming right up. So give us a little tantalizing tease for what people are going to see when they're seeing the work of Lee Running at Mainframe Studios.
Well, I'm so excited about the space, first of all. Mainframe is such an amazing building overall, but that entryway that when you come in is an amazing set of windows and walls. And I'm working on some very large format drawings right now. They're 4 by 6 feet.
Wow.
And they are stacked layers of handmade paper. And the images for this set of drawings come from, it's actually a parasite called cedar rust, which forms on crabapple and apple trees that happen at the fringe of between an urban and a rural area. And I'm interested in it because it actually rusts the leaves of the plant. So there's often a rust pattern of leaves stacked on top of each other. And the apples themselves grow long, sort of gelatinous spikes off of them. And they look very strange. They look like coral species or something like that. But it's a parasite that needs a juniper tree to host it and a crabapple tree to house it. So I'm working a lot with a play between these two plants and also the play in the Mainframe space of the window and the wall. So I'll have some work on the window and some work on the walls in these large format drawings.
You have really adopted the Iowa landscape as your own. Why? How? Coming from Colorado, that had to be a pretty big leap.
It was. I think when I first moved to Iowa, I wasn't sure what to look at. It took me a while to figure out how to see this landscape and how to see this landscape as anything exciting. And honestly, through my work in the early time at Grinnell, at the Center for Prairie Studies, first working with Larissa Model and now working with Elizabeth Hill out there, the landscape has really revealed itself to me in this amazing way. The 8 feet of prairie grass has as much diversity in it as the canopy in the northern redwoods in this country. And I think as soon as I took my eye off the horizon and stopped looking for the Rocky Mountains and was able to look at what was going on in the scale of the human body, a huge amount of diversity and growth and wildness revealed itself to me. And I think that's been a real gift of living here.
Well, it gives to me, 40 years in conservation, I see this really strong conservation undercurrent in your work. Is that a fair sight.
Absolutely. And I think as a sculptor in particular, I'm really drawn by material. Material is often the guide for where I start as an artist. And I moved to Iowa to follow handmade paper. I moved to Iowa to apprentice with Tim Barrett at the Center for the Book in Iowa City because I couldn't believe that there was a material that could behave like leather and also like silk. And also, like, I mean, every book we've ever held, every drawing I've ever looked at has been, the substrate is paper. And so this humble but impressive material that holds our entire culture also is held together just cellulose fibers and water. And I wanted to explore that whole range of what paper could be. So,
well, in one of your artist talks, you said you were always paying attention to every element of a material as part of a larger system. Is that what led you to this larger landscape of Iowa then?
Absolutely. And I think the project with the deer has really been driven by that as well. The sense of, one, I learned to work with the bones through traditional tools. Traditional tools of bookmaking are often made from bones, bone folders, needles, buttons. These are all objects that have been traditionally made out of bone. And I took a class in bone and steel tool making and started to see the carcasses that are by the roadsides in Iowa very differently. As a kid growing up in Colorado, I always collected objects from the natural world. I always had rocks in my pockets and, you know, plants pressed between the pages of books. And I think that sense of gathering and utility has always been a real component of my work.
You know, that's a common feature in conservationists, that they were youthful nature collectors.
Really?
FYI, yeah.
Oh, that's so great.
So I'm not surprised you came down this path. So you also mentioned in one of your talks this concept of magic or magical realism, and this idea of a relation of magic and real over time or through time. And I'm kind of trying to ultimately relate all this back to community building, because that's sort of the purpose of this podcast a little bit. So when you look at this conservation bent that you tend to have, you look at these fringes and these edges and these little habitat corridors and places you find that way, and you look at the magical realism of such a space or place, can you link that back to community in some way? Are you doing something that has a community-based underpinning?
I think so. And I think art at its core has the power to bring people together in really unexpected ways. And often that comes through making. I think most people are makers in their hearts and as children. I think you never hand a kid a crayon and they don't know what to do with it. There's not an instruction manual that comes with that. People know how to make through cooking. People know how to make through exploration, through gardening, through being outside. And what I love in works of art is when a sense of wonder can wake up in the same way that it does when someone is on a hike or when someone is outdoors. And that sense of witness in the natural world, the sense of witness that comes from being struck by a work of art. And I feel like I've had that experience all over the world of being hailed by works of art, by works of architecture. It's like they're calling to me through time, you know, and that conversation feels immediate and direct in the way that the relationship with the natural world does as well.
What would you say is the magic and what is the real in the Iowa landscape?
Oh, the magic is definitely the sky. The sky is the main player here. And it took me a minute to figure that out, too, that the sunsets here are out of control. The sunsets, the sunrises, it's like a film set every day. The most profound mystery to me has been fire.
As in renewal.
Exactly. I had no idea about prescribed burns before I moved here. And that phenomena is extraordinary. Some of that is coming from the West. Fires are not prescriptive there. Fires are terrifying in the West. And to be here where fire behaves, a line of water drawn across a field, the fire will burn right up to it and stop. But that,
as long as the day is not too windy.
Correct. No, under the right circumstances. But also the rapidity with which green returns is incredible to me. I feel like the burns that I've participated in, I think I've felt the most alive, as though all of my senses are awake at a very, very primal level. So maybe that's magic and real together, but And the reality, I mean, things like spring ephemeral blooms in a woodland where you see truly a carpet of Jack in the Pulpits or spring beauties or May apples, you know, these the names of the plants alone are magical and poetic. Yeah.
So let's talk about for a moment about the arts community itself. Mm. You're involved in an arts community at Grinnell. You're involved in an arts community at Mainframe, and now you're involved in an arts community, I assume, somewhere in Omaha, which you need to tell me a little bit more about. What are you finding? You left Colorado. You could have gone to New York or L.A., but you landed and stayed here, partly because, I guess, of the magical realism of our landscape, but also I imagine there's something here for you as an artist, as part of an arts community. Is that fair? And if so, what is it?
I mean, I moved here from Brooklyn, New York, so it was a definite culture shock initially. But the community in Grinnell has been one of academics, which is a beautiful community. And I've met scientists and writers and sociologists and thinkers that are doing real amazing work in the world, work for justice, work for peace, work for labor, you know, lots of different ways of thinking about the structure of the world. And the collaborations that I've been able to have there really opened my mind. I feel like it's been a liberal arts education for me to teach there, which is different from my own education. I went to traditional art school, but I was also a very non-traditional high school student. I was a high school dropout. I was a vocational welder. You know, I left and I had a very non-traditional education. But coming to Des Moines, I think particularly through the Iowa Arts Fellowship, getting the Iowa Arts Council Fellowship in 2017 truly opened my eyes to a statewide arts community that has been so warm. I truly have felt a strength in that community of makers, some of whom are tied to academic institutions, many of whom are not. And I think there is the privilege here of space, that is something that can happen here that can't happen in a major city.
Be more specific about that. What do you mean by that, the privilege of space?
Some through the privilege of spaces in the natural world. There are ways to walk, ways to interact with the landscape here. Things like creek beds in Iowa. Every creek bed is public space. And when I figured that out...
Kind of, sort of,
but when you can walk and canoe and move through those spaces, there's a way to traverse this landscape that's very different from the way I would traverse a mountain in Colorado, right? Yeah. It's a different way. And I think my relationship to that space has been one thing, but also physical spaces. And spaces like Mainframe are amazing, that there actually is affordable workspace for artists. I wish that there was more, always. But I think that's a real asset that Des Moines has.
Coming from Colorado and then Brooklyn, Pratt, what would you say is most needed here to be able to adequately, better than adequately, have our folks thrive as artists here? I think it's a question I ask almost every week, so
yeah.
Forgive me for that. But, you know, we're on an exploratory venture here.
Yeah, I mean, I think workspaces for sure, but also non-traditional exhibition spaces. I had an amazing exhibition in the Barnum Factory a few summers ago that was just, it was a completely magical evening inside of that space. And I love I love it when artists can come together to experiment and to do work that doesn't necessarily have to have a commercial bent, where work can happen because it's something that people are trying to figure out. I'm really, really interested in process spaces.
Well, and tipping back a little bit to something you said earlier, because I think I've heard it before, is that here, our arts community is perhaps more multidisciplinary and less about necessarily being someone that they might label themselves as artist, and more engaged in all these different backgrounds that you get to connect to.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think art can be a way to talk across disciplines. Artists are passionate amateurs of a lot of things. I mean, artists are often professional artists, but amateur astronomers or amateur chefs or amateur, you know, all kinds of activists.
Botanists.
Yes, yes, yes. Botanists, I would hope, maybe. I've been so much to learn.
I've been very intrigued by the work you've been doing based on the herbarium archives that you've been using from Grinnell.
Yeah.
Can you speak to that a little bit so that people can understand how that world has opened your eyes to this landscape as well?
And that project, the one both at Upper Iowa University in Fayette, which is a stunning collection. It's a 2,000 specimen herbarium that was found. It was begun in 1860 up there. And
I should briefly say, for people who do not know what an herbarium is, it's a place where plants are essentially archived, was the word I used, preserved, protected, and not as live pieces.
No, they're pressed flower specimens. And these collections were done by botanists and scientists, but also by amateurs. And this was done all over the state and all over the country at the turn of the century. And this specimen collection was preserved at Upper Iowa University, and I was given access to it last year. And inside this lab, there was a projector that's called an Elmo projector, which is just, it's an opaque projection unit. And I put one of these samples on it in the evening and blew it up onto this wall that was, it was an 8-foot wall inside the lab. And I couldn't believe the detail that came through this plant that was this old DNA. You know, I mean, it was DNA from 150 years ago, and there were colors inside of it, you know, this prairie smoke and these shooting stars that were, you know, still luminous inside their light. They looked like Tiffany lamps. You know, they were just gorgeous specimens. So I proposed a project where I would stack layers of translucent vinyl on the glass and build these transparent botanical specimens into the entire lobby of the atrium of the Edgar Fine Arts Building at Upper Iowa University, and let the light shine through. It's beautiful.
Well, and you did a microcosm version of that in the governor's office this past year in one of her windows.
Correct. Yep. So Kim Reynolds invited me to do a piece for January through June in her office. So I used a specimen from Grinnell's collection that is a fringed orchid that's on the federally endangered list.
And can be found at Chautauqua Bottoms Greenbelt in Northeast Polk County, but I won't tell you where.
I think I might have seen some of those photographs from that.
Yeah, you probably have.
They're amazing.
They are. They're a beautiful, an absolutely beautiful flower. I know I'm jumping around here a little bit, but we're running out of time, and there's so many things that we should do this again.
Yes.
So many things we should talk about. But one of the things is I wanted to talk about gallery representation.
Oh, yeah.
And from your perspective, what are kind of the pluses and minuses for an artist of gallery representation, particularly in the Midwest, and how that might compare if you were out on a coast or in a much bigger community?
I value my relationship with Olson Larson so deeply. Susan Watts has been a champion of my work for 10 years.
And she's going to be a guest on this show soon, so we're
good.
Looking forward to that.
She's the best. Yeah. And she also is an integral part of the Iowa arts community for me. I love that a gallery will take a risk on an artist like me. because my work is so odd.
And well, it's not going to hang neatly over a couch for the most part.
Correct. Yeah. But I love that I have a business that I work so closely with and that will help me write contracts and will help me facilitate projects when I'm doing something very large. I love that I can talk to Olson Larsen and say, does this seem reasonable? How should something like this transpire? What's the timeline that I should be thinking about for something like this? And we're constantly brainstorming ways to put work in public and ways to get things into other venues. And that's the work that I'm really excited about, as well as having a space that will give me deadlines every 2 years to have shows and to engage in really, really fantastic conversations. I think the first time I showed the Cure Project, the Deer Bones and Gold Leaf at Olson Larsen, I couldn't believe the public response to that work. It was phenomenal. And the conversations that I had with people would not have happened were there not a place to put that work in public. And galleries do such a beautiful job of putting artists in the public eye.
Are there any downsides to this whole relationship, or is it all pretty much smooth sailing? And in no way would that reflect on Olson Larsen. I'm not asking in that way.
No. I mean, I think if you trust your gallery, no. I truly think it's another advocate. And artists need all the advocates that we can get.
Yeah, I'm sure that's true. Would it be different in a larger community, better or worse, or...
I've thought about having a gallery in a city. I have not had the fortune of that occurring yet, but that's something I would consider in the future. I think really the important thing with Olson Larsen for me when we signed a contract years ago was that I trusted Susan and I trusted that institution. And I think if an artist has that relationship with a gallery, it's an incredibly positive thing.
Regardless of the relationship with the gallery, would you be able to be a full-time artist if you did not have the teaching gig? And teaching gig is really downplaying your professorial and chair role and your upcoming directorship. So,
I think artists always wear many hats. And I think there are ways that we can ask art to support us financially, but there's also ways that our creative voices can impact culture in lots of different ways. I would definitely be an artist if I was not an academic. I would have a very different life.
Oh, you would?
I don't know what my life would look like, but I'm sure I would live very differently. I probably wouldn't be at this conference.
I was going to say, I was thinking about the fact that here we are in the state of Iowa, not a highly populous state, and yet your work is very place-based, and so you spend a lot of time here in the Midwest. Heck, you're taking your sabbatical just a couple hours west of here. You didn't go off to Japan or somewhere, right? So it seems like it would be challenging to have an ongoing practice in a state where your work is so place-based and we're not that populous. There's not that many players to find you and seek you out and support your work.
I think that's always the challenge with an artist anywhere, is how to find your people, right? I mean, how do you find your people? And I'm so grateful that I found my people in Iowa. That community continues to grow. I'm finding people in Omaha as well, being there, which is fantastic. I'm meeting people at this conference that are growing and expanding my network. But I think, I don't have regret about where I live. I think people often apologize for the Midwest, and I'm not interested in that.
I think that's wonderful that you're not. Yeah, I'm not interested in that either. So tell me a little bit about what's happening in Omaha and what the future holds for your work. And then before we're done, I do want to touch base on the Center for Prairie Studies.
Oh, sure. So Omaha is space and fortuitousness. There was, I found a warehouse in Omaha. I found a massive space and I couldn't say no. It a number of circumstances came together and this space came available. And I knew that I had the time. So
hence
I went.
The big work?
Hence the big work. Exactly. I've been making these giant sheets of paper on the roof of a warehouse in Omaha. And it's something that I just physically would not be able to make in any other space. So it's happening. Sun on the roof dries them quickly. There's just a number of, I happen to have a hose and a roof drain. It's totally unusual, but ideal. So the space is fantastic. I also have a couple of different residencies. I'm going to the Morgan Conservatory in Ohio in October. I have 2 months at the Bernheim Forest in Kentucky between March and April. So I'm going to be there for the bloom of their trees. They have one of the largest collections of blooming trees in the country. So I'll be there working with those as inspiration. So there is some travel and there's some work, but the major thing that artists need to make their work is time and space.
And that's what we have here.
It is what we have here. Yeah. Yeah.
That's so great to hear that we've got something positive to offer. and which I think is, I'm being facetious, we have amazing things to offer here that I hear about over and over again. If you were to kind of bullet point for me the elements of your work that really support community, what would you say they are? Tough question, I know.
I mean, I think community can mean so many things. I think about when the Iowa Arts Council had us travel to other towns and places, communities we didn't know, and present the work that we were making. I was so moved by the stories that came to me from people, hunters, farmers in communities who were not necessarily interested in art in particular and might not have spoken to someone who looks like me. And I had really moving, intimate conversations with people about place, about their towns, about raising deer on their land when they were extinct in this state in the turn of the last century, the restoration efforts that have gone on, the restoration efforts that people are making on their family land in unknown, small, quiet ways. And I think that feels like community to me, and it feels like trust.
And it feels like trust. That's really a powerful statement, because that's one of the challenges we have in working in conservation in the state of Iowa, is building the level of trust needed.
I think it's a challenge that artists have too. I think the fear with art is that artists are making fun of people.
Ah,
that there's a joke going on that you don't get, or that something is happening that is somehow ironic in an unkind way.
I would have never thought of that, but I bet you might be right. I have to say, though, when I saw those internally gilded deer bones, I was struck by the title, Cure, and immediately picked up on what I heard you say later, this intersection of cure as in healing and cure as in preserving.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel as though, in some way, you're both healing and preserving some of these communities?
I think that's a really big ask. I would love to be a part of something. Yeah. I think art in its best way is connection. Art tries to build connection. And I think artists talk a lot about relationships and dialogue and interaction with audience and that kind of thing. But I think when people are making together, there's a different build of understanding that happens, and different kinds of things are facilitated through making than through talking or through doing other kinds of things. So I think when people witness a community that has an alive making presence, different kinds of things are possible.
And I might offer to you that there's another community out there that I do think you are helping to heal and preserve, and that is that voiceless community of habitat and wildlife and the species within. And I really want to thank you for that and turn quickly to your plans, if you will, your ideas for the Center for Prairie Studies when you take it over.
The Center for Prairie Studies is one of the jewels in Grinnell. I love that place so much. And John Andelson has done such an amazing job shepherding that center for the last 20 years at Grinnell College. And I'm stepping into some big shoes, but I also am really excited about the potential for the Center for Prairie Studies to do a great deal of outward-facing work in the world. I'm hoping that it can be a place to build community, but also to really explore the diversity of the landscape, the people, the place that is Iowa, but also is the global prairie. We are a very interconnected system of landscape.
Yeah, and there's not much of us left. So thanks for your work on all of that. I am going to be in the Cascade Mountains on a writing residency during the Yellow Door Gallery event on August 24th.
Congratulations.
So I'm very excited about that, but I'm also sick. I'm going to be missing that great salon. So I really want to thank you again, Lee Running, and encourage all the listeners here to go to the Yellow Door Gallery at Mainframe Studios on August 24th. And as always, I really want to thank Mainframe, Siobhan Spain, Justin Mandelbaum, and of course, my collaborator on this podcast, Alex Cooney. Without Alex, none of this would happen. Again, thank you, Lee Running. Your work is, as I said, magnificent.
Oh, thank you so much. This has been a real pleasure.
Pleasure for me, too. Take care.
Thank you.